Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It is 6:14 now, and I got some rain in the area. Then they're telling me it's going to clear up, but it might rain again. But then tomorrow they're saying it's going to be clear and hot, but it might rain. You know what? I think at this time of year, honestly, without tropical weather, barring tropical weather, I think it is exactly like Matthew McConaughey in that movie Wolf of Wall Street, where he say it's a wazzy, it's a woozy, fugazi, fugazi. They don't know. Nobody knows. And I think it's the same thing here, where in the summertime, there's a chance for showers. If it's raining hard, they say, oh, look, there's a cell of showers, and it could produce heavy rainfall. If it's not raining, they're saying, oh, well, it might rain later on, because that's just the way it is in summertime here. And I don't know that anything's really changed. So if it's not raining now, the only thing I can tell you is that it might rain later on. And if it doesn't rain later on, then it will after that. And that's going to be that way through October, barring any tropical weather. So I'm glad I got that solved. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University, to talk about the spending bill. How you doing, David?
I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well, too.
I am. I see this here. I'm reading from a story here. Fox News poll found that 38% of registered voters support the One Big Beautiful Bill. And when I see 38%, I got to tell you, it goes to that's the magic number when it comes to Trump's support of his base, where it's 38%. Again, think that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't matter. Am I wrong? And am I making a false connection there or not?
No, I think you're pretty close in terms of it, in terms of he's got a core base of support that's with him no matter what, whether it's the big, beautiful bill or, you know, what just happened, you know, the bombing in Iran, whatever it may be, they are core with him. But what becomes interesting also, and again, there's different polls that have looked at different things, of course, or slightly different things. If you actually start to break it down now into terms of saying, you know, what do people like or dislike about it? You know, once you start to say things like, well, do you support the idea that, you know, that this bill may, you know, raise, you know, cut taxes for, you know, for billionaires or cut insurance, you know, for you or something like that, then it becomes a little bit more interesting in terms of where it plays out for Trump supporters. But just the generic, do you support this bill? Yep, support it. I'm with him no matter what. I trust him no matter what.
But that's what I think the disconnect is in that 38%, because they do trust President Trump no matter what. However, when you ask them, how do you feel about debt and deficit? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? They're conflicted because they don't necessarily trust him when it comes to that, but they do trust him. So it's cognitive dissonance. So let's just support the president pretty much. Am I wrong there?
I think it is at this point. I gave a talk recently. There was somebody who, you know, some reporter asked two of us once, both political scientists, and they say, you know, why the loyalty to Trump? And this other person said, oh, it's polarization. I said, no, it's not polarization. I said, it's really a cult of personality mm-hmm. that he's really has at this point. It's just about him in terms of this attraction he has. And by the way, I'm not saying good or for bad.
No, and look, I'm getting ready to say that right now. This is not saying it's good, not saying it's bad. I'm just asking for historical context when it comes to cult of personality. Have we seen this before in this country or not?
Yeah, I think we have at some point. I think over time we've had people so devoted to who the president of the United States is, whether it's Ronald Reagan. I'm going to say it a decent past. For a while, you might have had it with people such as Franklin Roosevelt, you know, that people were just very, very devoted, you know, to that person and just absolutely loved that person. Now, it's hard to figure out at this point, if you look at 250 years, is there more of a personal devotion, uncritical devotion to Trump and previous presidents? Hard to measure or hard to tell, because 250 years of a lot of history. We don't have polling that goes back. But I would suggest, though, that this is a pretty strong cult of personality, because Trump himself, I mean, he called it right on the head a decade ago, you know, with the Fifth Avenue shooting argument or line at this point. So he knows that he's got this very devoted group of people, and you give him credit for it. You know, he knows how to work with that base to be able to move things.
And, of course, no matter what you say, somebody texted in and said, Tommy has pictures of Trump on his nightstand, hashtag obsessed. Whoever texted us in, I could list about 35 things that I have on my list that take precedent over Donald Trump in terms of me caring about. At least 30 things. So believe what you want, but I'm just trying to cover what's going on here. Let's talk about the big, beautiful bill, because what I find interesting about this is that the president has got about a year left till the midterms, right? We'll talk about this when we come back. Time till the midterms and what kind of stranglehold he's got, not necessarily a bad thing, what kind of strength he's got over Republican leaders and opposition as far as this big, beautiful bill, because it seems as though if a certain amount of Republicans, I'm just talking about the politics here, y'all, take a breath, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but in terms of the politics of it, I think if some Republicans are willing to stand up to him, then it might, in a way, be an emperor is not wearing any clothes kind of thing, where all of a sudden, it's okay, you got your 38%, but that's all you got. And then let's see what happens from here, or maybe not. I don't know. We're talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, about the big, beautiful bill. We'll also talk about the timeline of July 4th, what that means. 620, traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Somebody texted in, why do you have to apologize every time you say something positive about Trump? Same reason I have to apologize every time I say something negative about Trump, because as our guest David Schultz just told you, professor of political science at Hamline University, is a very polarizing figure. It's a cult of personality, and people hear what they want. So no matter whatever you say when you mention his name, say people get butthurt, some people get happy. So I don't know what to tell you about that. Let's talk about the...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Republican support, because I'm just looking at the politics of this, and it seems as though if Republicans can muster the strength to stand against Trump on this, this could be an emperor's new clothes kind of moment where, okay, then maybe Republicans can chart their own way for the party and don't have to fall into the cult of Donald Trump. But maybe I'm reading too much into this. What do you think?
Well, this is going to be interesting because we know we have midterm elections next year, and for both House and Senate members, there are a certain percentage of them who are vulnerable. You know, if you look at their districts, you know, if they were to vote for the big, beautiful bill, and several senators, like what Josh Hawley has pointed this out, like if they were to make significant cuts, you know, to Medicaid, for example, this is going to hurt their constituents. And we notice across the country also, and a lot of the Republican senators are looking at it saying that, listen, for two reasons. One, I don't want to hurt my constituents. You know, my job is to help my constituents, not to hurt them. And B, if I hurt my constituents, this may endanger both my reelection or Republican control, you know, of the House and or Senate. And so it's an interesting poll at this point. Do you remain loyal to your party's president? Or do you now say, gosh, I need to act in the best interest of my constituents? And that's what's going to be really fascinating to look at here also, too, is this dual poll. And, you know, dual poll, you know, between, you know, what a lot of these representatives and senators are going to do. And it really will tell us something about the future of the party in terms of where it's headed, because at some point there will be a Republican Party beyond Donald Trump. And I think the Republicans need to figure out what that party's going to look like and what it's going to stand for.
So could you make a case, I'm trying to think what the Congressional Budget Office has said about this bill, that President Trump is saying, you know what, I'm concerned about the future of the nation, not the states and debt and deficit. And the GOP senators are saying, I'm concerned about getting reelected or about my people, so therefore I don't want to cut Medicaid, or... pardon me, are both disingenuous because it's still contributing to debt and deficit?
Well, I'll go to your last statement first. If we look at I think the most interesting warning sign that came out in the last few weeks is when Moody's basically said we're downgrading the bond rating of the United States because of the spending that we have. And if the Big Beautiful Bill passes, I mean, this is going to have huge implications in terms of the debt load for the United States. And so think about this on the one level. We've got lots of Republicans and lots of us just in general who are concerned about the scope of our national debt, who are concerned about our deficit every year. And across the board, everybody recognizes the fact that the Big Beautiful Bill is going to have huge implications in terms of increasing our national debt, which I don't think, I'll defer to economists. Economists are saying that's not good for the country in terms of it. So where do we go? Do we go in terms, if I'm a Republican senator, for loyalty to the president, or do I say that my first loyalty is to the good of the nation, and this bill does not further the good of the nation in terms of the debt load and the deficit?
So the Republicans that oppose it are saying you're hurting my constituents and not really doing anything to address debt and deficit. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly what we're hearing from some of them at this point. And the question now becomes, do they say at this point that those are more important concerns than supporting the president of the United States? And keep in mind, our founding fathers, the Ben Franklins et al. Of the world, presuppose that our system operates when members of Congress do their job. That's the whole concept of separation of powers and checks and balances. And their argument was country is supposed to come first, not loyalty to the president. In fact, your job is to check the president of the United States.
Along those lines, I just want to ask you real quick. They're going to kill me for doing this because we're late, but I only got 30 seconds. The legal mandate, whatever is needed for the president to bomb Iran, can he do that as commander-in-chief, or does he need somebody's approval for that?
He should have had permission from Congress to do that. Either the Constitution does not allow him to do this kind of preemptive attack, and the War Powers Act doesn't allow him to do that. He needed to get permission.
All right, thank you. 6:30, time for WWL First News. So that would go to Dave Cohen. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Chance for showers today, then it's going to stop, then it's going to rain, then it's going to stop, just like it does every day in the summertime. Somebody texted in, so the last five presidents have bombed adversaries without authorization, but now it's a problem because Trump did it. I wish these so-called experts would make up their minds. I don't know, but I'll tell you what. In the next hour, we're going to talk to Javed Ali, a former senior director for counterterrorism on the National Security Council during the first Trump administration, and an associate professor of practice at the University of Michigan's Ford School. So we'll get his take on that. Right now, we're talking about Iran and oil and gas with Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. How you doing, Greg?
Doing well. Good morning, Tommy.
So I'm thinking Iran, Middle East, oil, gas problems. Am I wrong?
Oh, man, no, you're not wrong at all. It's been a tough 2 weeks. And, of course, the humanitarian crisis of what is going on is, you know, you never want to forget about when thinking about the impacts on the global markets. But, yeah, it's been a wild few weeks watching what's going on. Go back in mid-June.
Greg, wait a minute. Hang a second. Put a human face on that. Talk about the humanitarian crisis, if you would. From an economist, when it comes to energy, I'm sorry, but you rang that bell and you got me thinking about it. Put a human face on it. Go ahead.
I mean, just the conflict of Israel and having the bombs, you know, going in there and thinking about the missile defense systems and just the stress to the people that are living there every day. I mean, you know, we talk often about, oh, well, this is what's happening with oil prices. How's it going to impact us at the pump? What's going to happen to the oil industry in Louisiana? And don't get me wrong, it's important for people to be informed of these things. But I think it's also important to realize that, you know, there are real people suffering with this, and we're really fortunate to be where we are.
I always get to go back to a pebble in a pond, and when you're the closest circle to that pebble hitting the pond, that's all that concerns you. As you get out from there, other things concern you, but when you're closest to that pebble, the main thing you're concerned is that the immediate ripple effect of that pebble hitting the pond, right? And that's what I think you're saying, that we got to remember a lot of people. Their lives
Absolutely.
Have been altered forever because as a result of this. Talking about the pebble in the pond and as things go out, I can remember living through the oil embargo and having to wait in line for gas when it was there, or maybe not gas as a very, very young guy. with my parents, and you know, it was a matter of whether you could get it or not. Are we beyond those days?
Yeah, I think we're definitely beyond those days, which is obviously a good thing. So I think the supply of oil globally has really been diversified. The U.S. now has seen a straight decade to a decade and a half of increased oil production, and that oil production continues to increase every year. And so kind of the relative importance of those imports from the Middle East has subsided, and in fact, we're a net exporter of oil and all these refined products now. And so the kind of days of the 1970s and the oil embargo and the conflict with OPEC in the Middle East, I think that that's highly, highly unlikely to happen, at least in the next few years.
So I'm looking at a story here about Iran closing the Strait of Hormuz and leading to higher oil prices. We'll talk about that in a second. On the other side of it, I can also see where you can't let Iran have a nuclear weapon. What can Iran do with the Strait of Hormuz? How strategic is that? Tell me the story of the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, sure. So I'll back up a little bit to go back about 2 weeks. Oil prices were about $65 a barrel, and we started seeing this conflict escalating. Iran is about 5% of the global oil production, which is, of course, significant. But the Strait of Hormuz, which is right there in the Middle East, and you have all those countries ship their oil out to the world from there. So you've got the Persian Gulf. It kind of gets a little bit thin there, and that's called the Strait of Hormuz. And that's where you have, of course, Saudi Arabia. You've got Kuwait. You've got Iran, you've got Iraq, and all that oil moves through that strait. It's somewhere in the ballpark of about 20% of the global oil production is stripped through that. And so there's two things to look at. Of course, there's the production from Iran itself, but then there's also the movement of that crude all over the world. And so because of this geopolitical conflict and the uncertainty, you saw oil prices creep up from about $65 a barrel to about $75 a barrel over the course of about 2 weeks. And so Friday, I was looking at the markets at the end of the day. Again, the prices were up about $10 a barrel from a few weeks ago. But interestingly, when I was looking at the futures markets, what they were telling me is that by January or so, the price was going to be back down to about $67 per barrel. And so what this told me is that markets were really anticipating that the effect of this on the global oil market was probably going to be short-lived by a few months, and everything would be back kind of into equilibrium. Of course, then we have the further escalation this weekend. We've got the Trump administration goes in and bombs those three nuclear facilities in Iran. Monday morning comes, and I'm expecting for oil prices to be even higher, but that's actually not what happened. Mm-hmm. They ended up being relatively stable. Then we saw the further escalation right before the ceasefire, and then oil prices actually came back down to now around $67 a barrel. So interestingly, given all the uncertainty and everything that's going on, oil prices today are within about $2 of where they were before the conflict really started escalating 2 weeks ago.
And you would explain that how? Because my only comment is a Jed Clampett asks, the Dickens, you say. How would you explain that, Greg?
Yes, I mean, the ceasefire, of course, is good news, you know, if that is indeed is the case. But, of course, now I'm opening up the news this morning and seeing that Iran is claiming that Israel has not abided by that ceasefire. So, you know, I think that markets are constantly trying to weigh, well, what's the risk on both the supply and the demand side, and it's the balance of those. And so as you have these conflicts arise, I think what you'll see is more volatility than in a normal kind of day-to-day.
All right, let me
and
take
so
a break.
That's what we are seeing. Mm-hmm.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We can back President on Truth Social Media saying to the Department of Energy, drill, baby, drill, and I mean now. Also saying in a separate post, everyone keep oil prices down. I'm watching. You're playing right into the hands of the enemy. Don't do it. You can explain what that means when we return. 651, 652, traffic now, WWL. 657, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies, talking about Iran and what that's got to do with us and oil prices. President Trump on Truth Social posting, drill, baby, drill, and I mean now, to the Department of Energy, then saying, everyone keep oil prices down. I'm watching. You're playing right to the hands of the enemy. Don't do it. I don't know what that means. Greg, well, how did you interpret that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, the individual companies are not responsible for what the price of any commodity is. Mm-hmm. And when you have a globally traded commodity, and oil's perhaps the best example of this, you literally have thousands of companies producing this commodity all over the world. You have almost an infinite amount of demand or individual sources of demand, and it's really the coming together of that for which supply and demand balance in order to have that price. And so I think it can be a politically expedient thing to say during a time where you've got prices that are fluctuating. And I think we've seen politicians on both the left and the right come out and kind of either blame the companies when the price goes up or make these kind of claims. But in reality, the companies have no real impact on what that global price is.
Well, two questions. First of all, I'm trying to figure out if oil is oil, and what do we need to refine into gasoline as it relates to oil prices, and does that come from the United States or from somewhere else, if you want to answer that first?
Yeah, sure. So today in the United States, we still do import oil from other parts of the country in order to fill refineries that are specifically geared towards, not to get too technical, but a heavier and more sour crude. But we are a net exporter of oil itself because we export some of our oil directly. But we're also a net exporter of those refined products, which includes, of course, the gasoline, the diesel, the jet fuel, those kind of things that the refineries produce. And so it is an integrated global market, but we're much less susceptible to these global shocks today because of our increased production and us being a net exporter of these products.
And real quick, simple solutions, complex problems, politically expedient, I realize all that. But what's a turnaround if a company was to start drill, baby, drill, turn around on one day, okay, let's go, and then actually start producing oil and offset whatever happens with Iran? Timeline on it?
Weeks to months.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Javed Ali, former senior director for counterterrorism on the National Security Council during the first Trump administration. So we'll get his take on the latest in the conflict with Iran and how the Iranians are responding to the strikes, and answer any questions you have at 504-260-1870. Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWO.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.